Okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, April 5th, 2011, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Lavendar. This evening, you'll hear a spellbinding story as experienced by our own co-host, Sierra. As you listen, you'll be inspired not only by her courage in overcoming extreme traumas, but also by the courage it took to tell this story publicly. And tonight's the first time. It includes foster homes, government intrigue, abduction, and being impregnated with a hybrid child, a visit from the Men in Black, and a tour of a secret government facility at NORAD, as well as being a Desert Storm veteran with honors. And now she carries a Pleiadian walk-in. Although I had heard bits and pieces of her story, I just heard the whole story a few days ago, and I have to say, Sierra, that I am so proud of you. If anyone has deep, unresolved issues, Sierra's story may stir things up a bit, but her courage will be an inspiration to help you move past them as she did. Sierra won't be on the chat room tonight in order to take calls and talk to our listeners. We'll be starting the show with our weekly Belvelation from our resident health expert, Dr. Belva Bloomer, with some recommendations for good health. We would like to thank Purple Sage and Mystic for hosting the chat room and switchboard tonight as they help us in taking questions and comments from you. The call-in number is 917-889-8292. That's 917-889-8292. Then press 1 if you have something to say. Otherwise, we'll think you're just listening. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. As always, we ask you to be brief and remember that others will also be waiting with comments. Before we get started, I'd like to ask each and every one of you for your help, as I do each week. We get a lot of wonderful emails from our listeners and members of our community wanting to know what they can do to help us. As you know, our motto is empowering Starseed to better serve the planet. And one of the best ways we can do that is to increase our visibility. Each week we have well over 1,000 people listening to this show, but so far only 233 have registered at Blog Talk Radio and clicked the word follow on our show page. If we could really increase our number of official followers, we'll have a better chance of increasing our visibility in being a featured show here. So please, register for free and click the word follow on our show page. You'll be helping not only Starseed Radio Academy, but other Starseeds who haven't yet found their way here. If you haven't visited our main site yet, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. That's starseedhotline.ning.com. We'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. We also want you to know that we have so many requests for our Starseed confirmation service, which we call a Stage 1 reading, that there could be up to a two-week wait. With a Stage 1 reading, you'll get your natal and progress charts and an MP3 of your reading pointing out and explaining your star markings if you have them. Our Stage 2 readings, which are a one-on-one phone consultation, do get priority and include the Starseed confirmation. Both Lavendar and I are available for Starseed confirmations and personal consultation. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so don't miss out. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lavendar.
Hello, Arielle, and I am so excited to be able to present tonight this wonderful story from Sierra and the courage that she had just to come forward and tell us this story. It's going to be a long one, so everybody get ready and get your seatbelts on. This will take you for a ride. So why don't we do the Bevelation first, and then we'll go into Sierra's story.
Okay. This is our weekly Bevelation from Doc Belva Bloomer, and as read by Lavendar.
This is Lavendar reading for Belva Bloomer for today's Bevelation. One of the products that I did not include in my last Bevelation, a favorite of mine, that I take every day is Chlorophyll Complex Pearls. This is a supreme source of magnesium. This product is used to help people with heart problems and those suffering from a magnesium deficiency. Chlorophyll is a natural internal cleanser and has been proven helpful to people suffering from intestinal and colon problems. Chlorophyll is helpful as a source of prothrombin and is thereby an aid to people with blood clotting problems. It should be utilized by anyone undergoing surgery. Its fat-soluble vitamin content makes it a strong sexual hormone precursor, and this helps with a reduced sex drive. It helps women and men with reproductive problems, plus prostate problems for men. This product is one of the only sources of raw chlorophyll produced in America. As a cleanser, it helps with digestion and smelly gas. A partner product with this is Gastrex, a remarkable product made from natural colloidal silica from volcanic ash with bentonite clay and a host of digestive substances. It serves to absorb waste from your digestive system and eliminate it. It will absorb several hundred times its weight in toxins. It's like a miracle for ulcer sufferers, those with colitis, gastritis, heartburn, food poisoning, or chronic indigestion. Lavendar here. Yes, I take Gastrex, and it really does work. It is a very wonderful product for digestion. I also take an AF beta food sometimes for digestion, and they make the same product. Dioplex is a product that really helps people with sugar metabolism problems like diabetes, hypoglycemia. It is a truly remarkable product made from over 20 nutrients, making up one complete nutritional complex. It contains betaine, hydrochloric acid, extract of pancreas, liver, spleen, kidney, adrenal, with vitamins A, B, C, chromium, iodine, niacin, magnesium, potassium, inositol, flaxseed oil extract, and much more. I have one more interesting event to share with you. On Saturday night, I clicked on public broadcasting, and Paul McCartney from the Beatles was giving a concert in Red Square in Russia. They said there were 50,000 people attending, plus the president of Russia. And the most amazing thing was that every Russian was singing with Paul in English. One of the authorities sitting with the Russian president said, "I learned to speak English because I wanted to know what the Beatles were saying in their songs." 2 weeks ago, I taped a conversation with the former Prime Minister of China. He is a Cambridge graduate, and he spoke perfect English. He said that he wants every school child in China to speak English, that it should be the chosen world language in the future. In this time of violence and disturbing events, these two miracles let me see what our future could accomplish. Let it be, as Paul McCartney sang. Love and good health to all of you. Signed off, Doc Belva. Back to you, Arielle.
Well, thank you so much, Belva. I know that the products that you talk about are really wholesome and well made. And if anyone wants to speak to Belva further about that, excuse me, you can reach her by email or phone message on our website. So, Lavendar, you still with us?
I'm
of
here.
Of course you are. Of course you're here with us. Before we actually start Sierra's story, I just want to take a moment here to give recognition to one of our Starseed listeners who has really exemplified our motto of empowering Starseed to better serve the planet, and that is Carolina Grashoff, who we did a Starseed confirmation for months and months ago, and she has really taken that information and run with the ball, and she now has her own radio show here on Blog Talk Radio called Wellness Co-Creator. And she is giving out just great, great information and very well done. So congratulations and honors to Carolina for picking up the ball and running with it. So check out her radio show. It's called Wellness Co-Creator right here on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, Lavendar, back to you.
Okay, so is Sarah, is she on the line?
Yes, she is.
Well, why don't we welcome her first?
Okay. We have, just so you all know, we have, the switchboard is just jam-packed with callers, and I know Sierra is one of them. She's in here. There she is. There she is. Okay, hang on a sec. Okay, Sierra.
Hello.
You're on the air, Lavendar. You are too.
So, Sierra, I just wanted you to know how proud of you I am for you to come forth and tell this story, and for the courage that you've had to take the time to do it and to experience it and to know that you're standing in your power and your alignment and you're going forward with all this information, and it's going to be able to help so many people when they hear your story. So, and I hope that the film producer that you've been working with, he really, the hope that he appreciates the fact that he is dealing with you with his story, and hopefully we'll get to see this on the screen soon. So with that, Sarah, just hold tight. We're going to play your story, and for those that want to call in later, we'll have some time, about 20 minutes of time to talk to people. Okay.
My name is Lavendar, and today we're talking to our Sierra, the Sierra that takes care of our chat room on Starseed Hotline. And Sierra, I just want you to know how happy I am that you are with me today talking about the subject of abductions, contact, and your experiences and what you have gone through in your life to be who you are now. So, let's just start by saying that your birth, let's talk about your birth, because let's track this entire experience and starting with your birth.
Perfect. And it is my great honor to be on with you all today and to share my story, and thank you for the opportunity to do so, Lavendar. So starting from the beginning, my mother lived in Orlando, Florida, near McCoy Air Force Base. And I don't know if you all are familiar with McCoy Air Force Base, but they had run a lot of top-secret programs out of McCoy Air Force Base. Now, the locals would talk about the different lights that they would see around the base, and there was also a very deep lake they had there. And, of course, the rumors around with the locals was that a spacecraft would fly in and out of that particular lake, and then it was a bottomless lake, so there was all kinds of fantastic rumors that would run around. But basically what's important is that my mom was 16 years old, and she was she describes it as being seduced by a very angelic, very otherworldly man, and he was very tall, dark hair, blue eyes, and so she fell in love with him at 16 and became pregnant by him. They dated very shortly for a couple of months, and she went on the Air Force Base a couple of times and would meet him there, and so knew for sure that he was a part of the Air Force Base there. And when she became pregnant, she went in to talk to him about that because she was a little, you know, upset about the fact that she's getting ready to turn 17 or had just turned 17 and was pregnant and wanted to talk to him about what they could do. And when she went on to the Air Force Base that day, they said that he had left and had been transferred and would not tell her where he had been transferred. I mean, she caused a scene. She got all upset. They were nice to her, and they treated her with kid gloves, but they did escort off the base and say that she would not be able to make any more contact with this gentleman. And so she was pregnant with me and had me just before her 18th birthday. And our birthdays are very close in time, actually. Mine is September 29th, and hers is October 4th. So then she went ahead and started traveling and ended up meeting another gentleman who was in the Army and had a baby with him. It's my brother, 4 years younger than me. But what's interesting about that is how she would talk about him. And to this day, you know, when we, well, I'll progress forward, but after some time, she made some poor choices with people she was seeing after her and Dana Sr., my brother, who's the next in line, broke up. And she just kind of spiraled downhill, was really lost without this man that she had met when she was in Orlando, who's my father. And she made some poor choices, and it's okay. She just did with the best that she could, but the men that she were around were very abusive. And this one particular gentleman that she was with after Dana Sr., my brother next in line, was just very violent. And she was out trying to find herself. She was out trying to find her answers. She was very disturbed, and I didn't understand until later on in life what had her be so upset. So basically it down spiraled the situation until the state chased us. Actually, we're in Orlando. We moved up to Kentucky, and we moved cross country to Arizona. There was a situation where I was the oldest, and so I would try to protect my brothers and sisters and basically put myself between them and the abuser and sort of take it for them. And there was a teacher in school that started to notice the patterns, and the very last day that I was there, she came and said that she was sorry. She did everything that she could, and I didn't understand what she was saying until I went home, and we ended up packing all our bags and moving to Arizona. And at the time, I didn't realize that they were running. He was running from, you know, the questions that started to happen. So we moved to Arizona, and you know, another thing to talk about me being younger was, from the time I was about 3 years old, I had all these dreams about earth changes, and they were very scary. And what I was seeing back then was a lot of destruction, a lot of loss of life. And it was an experiential thing. It was a lucid dream. It was lucid dreaming. So as I was in the dream and as I was witnessing what was happening, I could sense and everything that was happening for people, for the earth. And it was very, at the time, it occurred as very traumatic for me. I didn't understand what was happening, and I didn't know why I was having these dreams. When I got to be a little bit older, I started having prophetic dreams, and I was able to track those, where I would dream something sort of like they would send a ripple through the, you know, around the world, something like a natural disaster where there was loss of life, where a lot of people would check out at the same time, like a plane crashing or a train derailing, and I was always there, and I was always witnessing it when it was happening. So when I was younger, when I was 9 years old, the state of Arizona took us away from my mother and my stepfather, and I was the eldest at 9 years old of six children, and we went into a foster home. We thought we were going to be able to stay in this foster home together, and they ended up separating us all except for my brother and I. It was only by some drastic action that I took that I basically grabbed a hold of them one day when they were trying to take them away, because they would take all the children away when I was away at school and not give me a chance to say goodbye to them. And so when I started to figure out what was happening, the very last one to leave was my younger brother, who was 4 years younger than me, and I grabbed him and started yelling and carrying on, and they set me aside. They put me aside, and they said, "You're old. You're too old. Nobody wants you. And if you stay with him, if you make us keep you together, he'll never be adopted." And I just put my chin up and stuck my chest out, and I said, "We will be fine. I'll take care of him." So we went into the foster care system, and it was 4 years of pretty intense things that happened. But the one thing that I do remember through all of that was almost as if there was someone else there with me the entire time that gave me a kind of strength and a sense of security. I was way stronger and way more resilient and very, very strong in these situations. And I remember there would be flashes of light and balls, blue balls of light that would show up in my room. There was a period of time where a gentleman was locking me in the closet during the day, and I wasn't in there alone. There was a blue ball of light that would come in there and keep me company. And I always had the sense that I was always protected, and I was always, even though there were horrible things that would happen, that I would always be okay. And so we went into the foster care system for 4 years and finally came across a family that was looking for a boy. And they said, well, he comes with an older sister. And they said, well, let's meet her. And we were adopted by my current family, my adopted family, who was very, very just lifesavers, really. They've just, I can't say enough about my adopted family and what they've done for me. But they adopted me when I was I think it was 12 or 13. I was preteen when I was adopted by them. And once I finally was not running around and there was a sense of stability, what started to surface in my life was the dreams. There was just a lot of dreaming, a lot of dreaming of not being here on Earth and being in a different place, a lot of dreaming, again, of things that would happen, and it would show up on television or in the newspaper, a lot of things like that would happen. I was very closed down also. I was very hardened and kept a lot of this to myself. I mentioned it once or twice to my mom and my family, and they took me in to see a counselor, and I automatically knew right away, because I always had this presence with me, that I wasn't to be talking about what was going on, or they would lock me up. And I was always sort of like, it's not safe for you to talk about these things, so don't talk about them. And so I always had the sense enough about to not say very much, just say enough to have them leave me alone. And I learned really quickly, even though my adopted parents were just trying to do the best they could, and they sent me to a preacher and did a hands-on healing and all this other stuff, and they were well-intentioned, but they weren't ill-equipped to deal with what was happening for me as a child and as a young adult. And so I kept it all inside. I remember being in high school, I played basketball. It was the thing that directed all of my energy and things. And I was also, another thing I was dealing with and I didn't realize at the time, was I was very, very empathic, and I could pick up people's thoughts, feelings, physical sensations, emotional sensations, and I never did well in crowds, and I just kept alone. I did a lot of alone time and a lot of time out in nature. It really kept me balanced, and it helped me a lot. But I think that we could later on go into, you know, some of the dreams. I don't think that's very important at this time, but that I was very gifted, and at a very young age, with my intuitive abilities and empathic abilities and dreams, prophetic dreams, about things that were happening around the world that I would have no contact with. Now, that didn't happen with people that were near me. So if a person near me was in danger or something like that, I didn't have a sense about that. It was always something that was a major ripple across the earth, major loss of life or a major shifting in on the earth.
Well, I get what you're saying and why you're, you know, telling the story the way you are. But just to go back to your birth just for a moment.
Sure.
I feel like that you, I felt two experiments being placed upon your mother at the same time. One was Pleiadian and one was the government. Okay?
Yes.
And the government, of course, are playing with the grays. So I'm feeling a duality. It's almost like the government had the play, but the Pleiadians were in observing and making sure you were okay. It's like,
yes.
It's like a dual assignment. I just wanted to to go back to that point, and I feel like that your father, he was some kind of genetic experiment as well.
I believe that, yes.
So, and who knows, he may be listening now. Who knows?
It's an interesting thing that you say that, because it's, in a very strange way, I felt like he's kept tabs on me my entire life. I never felt like I was alone, and I don't know if it's just been my Pleiadian contact all my life, or every once in a while it seems as though, and I can get into that a little bit more as I get into my military background,
okay.
Because I did some things
okay.
in the military that I should
okay.
have been in jail for.
All right. Okay. All right. Okay, let's go back to the story where you were adopted and you were starting to have dreams and lucid dreams. And how long did you live with your family? Are you still with that family now? And do you have contact with your real mother?
Yes, I do. And but I didn't find my biological mother until I was 24 years old.
Okay.
And it was just interesting timing that I actually found her right before my experience with the in Colorado Springs. So basically the rest of my young adult life was uneventful, just putting myself, besides, you know, obviously all of the dreams, prophetic dreams. When I turned 18, I started having these dreams of Native American ceremony. And that was just a whole other level of things that I was experiencing. And at that time, I didn't realize it, but my blood code was being activated. And I didn't know until I found my mother, my biological mother, that I come from Cherokee medicine blood. My great-grandmother was a full-blooded Cherokee medicine woman. And she comes from the Dreamwalker clan. So my strength and ability always came in my dream state. So I'll just kind of fast forward into, I went into college, was injured, and I had a basketball scholarship. But the thing that really starts to kick in is from the time I turned about 18, I had this insatiable need to join the military. I believe that was programming that the military put in so they could continue to track me. And was injured in my freshman year in college, which was in Alamosa, Colorado. If you all are understand that, you all remember that the San Luis Valley has a very high concentration of UFO sightings and interactions. And this was in 89 that I went down there, and I was offered full ride scholarships to NCAA Division I schools, and I chose to go to the San Luis Valley. to a NAIA Division I school. And the reason why I went down there is, I don't know if you all know anything about basketball, but Doc Cotton was one of the original LA Lakers, and he was coaching the Alamosa team. And I went down there because I really wanted to be coached by him. So
I didn't know, you'd never told me you played basketball. I played basketball in high school. And it was my main thing. I mean, it's like everybody else went to study hall and I went to shoot free throws every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, good. You and I will have to get together and play basketball. I love it.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
So, when I was injured, I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
So, I was injured. It was a freak injury. It actually broke my lower back in a basketball game. And I was very, very fast and very good at what I did. And the way that it happened, a woman in a game, I went up to really, really high, like I was going to dunk the ball, and she hit me in the lower back and flipped me over, and I landed on my shoulders and hyperextended my lower back and broke my spinous process and slipped my disc and tore everything up, and they wanted to do surgery, and I said, no, you're not going to do that. I wheeled myself out in a wheelchair over to a chiropractic office, and they got me going within 3 or 4 months, and so I was out of basketball, and there that sensation was again. I just kept having these visions of I couldn't get it out of my mind, of a man in uniform and BDUs, the camouflage uniform with paint all over his face, like he's completely camouflaged. And so I ended up going into the Army. I joined the Army. I joined the Army as a reservist, but it just happened to join Army and was in boot camp when Desert Storm happened. And so we were activated, and I did a little bit of my time playing around in the war, and came back, and I went on the GI Bill. The reason why I went to the reserves is I thought, well, I could go back to college and I could get my degree. And when I came back, I had no interest in being in college. I tried to go back for like a couple of months, and it just, I just didn't resonate with anybody. I was no longer a child. My innocence was gone. I was completely a different person after the programming that I went through with the military. And so I threw myself into it, and I trained men in hand-to-hand combat, and I was a wartime sniper, and I was a really good soldier, and I accelerated very quickly, and I got out of full-time active duty. It was in 93, I was in the reserves, and I out-processed through Colorado Springs, and so I just sort of hung around Colorado Springs, Colorado, out of Fort Carson when I out-processed, and I was living there, and I was doing construction at the time. And it was during this time that, it was right before that, actually, that I met my biological mother. I had a scrapbook that she had given me, and I'd gone to place after place after place, person after person, seeing if they would help me find her with the information I had in the scrapbook. And it just happened to be that in the fall of 1993, I found her. So when I found her and I told her about the dreams, she said, oh, yeah, those dreams started for me when I was about 17, 18, right after I had you. And I said, whoever this is, I don't want to have anything to do with this. And she actually stopped dreaming. She didn't actually have another dream after that when she said no, when she turned it down. And so we started to develop our relationship, and we started to do the work we needed to do because of everything that happened. There was some work I needed to do with her on my anger with her and so on and so forth. But it just is interesting because the timing of it is that it was the fall of 1993, and it was the spring of 94 when I was living in Colorado Springs as a civilian, that one evening my partner and I had an apartment, and it was on the lower level and facing the interior of a apartment complex, so there was lighting. And in the bedroom, there was light that would come through the Venetian blinds and light up the left side of the wall where the bathroom was. And it was this ongoing running complaint, you know, that I had with my partner, that my partner would get up in the middle of the night, announce that she was going to the bathroom, walk into the bathroom, open the door, turn on the light, shut the door, go to the bathroom, open the door, shut off the light. And of course, it just blinded me, woke me up. It was just this thing we had constantly going. And another thing, too, is as far as ETs and aliens and stuff like that, it's sort of like I could take it or I could leave it. It never really did interest me very much. I just always knew that they would be out there, but I didn't want to track them or anything like that. But it just happened to be the partner I was with was absolutely obsessed about aliens and little gray men. And it's funny, actually, now that I think back on my life, the people that were around me were always very into UFOs and aliens and wanted to see an aircraft, and I just didn't care. I could care less. And so this evening, when we had a friend in from out of town, and our friend was sleeping in the living room just outside of the bedroom door, it was about 12:40 at night, and I was awoken by a woman in the courtyard screaming. Not screaming like somebody was killing her, but screaming like she was very startled. So I woke up, and I looked over at the clock, and it said 12:40, and I went, huh. I rolled on my left side because I was a left-side sleeper. And my partner gets up, doesn't say anything, walks into the bathroom, doesn't turn on the light, shuts the door, and I hear the seat cover raise up, and I hear her sit down on the toilet. And I went, huh, that's very odd. And I didn't think anything of it and started to fall back asleep. And as I started to fall back asleep, I started to get tingling in the back of my neck, and my eyes shot open. And standing near the door of the bathroom against the opposite wall was a little gray, a Zeta Reticuli. And against all of my training, because the reason why I'd mentioned to you the hand-to-hand combat wartime sniper is that I would have just jumped up and probably grabbed the little guy because there was someone in my room. And, you know, I slept with a gun next to the bed. I had a knife under my pillow. That's just sort of like the person I was. And I couldn't move. And it was more alarming to me that I couldn't move. And so I started to panic. And as I started to panic, I went back to sleep again against everything it is that I wanted to have happen. And then sometime later, I started to come to consciousness again, my eyes open, and he was just a little bit, or it was just a little bit closer to the bed. And I tried to move, couldn't move, and panicked, and started panicking again. And all the while, there was something going on in the background, but I couldn't hear it because I was panicking. And then as soon as I would get to the point where I was really panicking, out I would go again. This went on a couple times. And finally, about the third or fourth time, when I opened my eyes, and little gray man was so close to the bed that all I could see now was sort of like the torso and the bottom of his mouth because I couldn't move my head. I opened my eyes and I kind of blinked and I went, okay, so this is really happening. What should I do? And when I was calm enough, I could hear in the back of my mind, please be calm. We're only here to check on you. Please be calm. And then I was like, I panicked and I went out again. Oh, my goodness. So the next time I opened my eyes and he was still standing there, what I started to do was take stock of my body. If he was to check on me, if he was there checking on me, I wanted to know what they were doing. And as I was laying there, I just brought consciousness to my body, and I felt this cool sensation running up and down my body. And it was like, okay, what is that? Is that a fan? No, it's not a fan. It's a cool wow, I'm being scanned. And then I went, oh, my God, this has happened before. I panicked, and out I went again. So the next time I opened, and then I think that was it. And then all of a sudden, the light turned on, the bathroom door got flung open, my partner walks out cursing, and I can sit up and was really relieved that I could sit up and looked over at the clock, and it was 4:46 a.m. She had been out on the toilet, sitting on the toilet this entire time. The next morning, we go out. She's getting ready to go to work. She leaves for work, and our friend says, the oddest thing happened last night. I heard this woman screaming in the outside somewhere, and I woke up because I thought maybe it was one of you. Maybe you had a bad dream or something. I went to knock on the door, and as I was in mid-swing, I woke up on the couch this morning. It was just really weird what happened. And so, of course, my partner, Gina, just goes on. Says the whole thing, that there was a gray there, and how all she's ever wanted to do in her entire life was see an aircraft, and they come to visit, and they put her to sleep on the toilet. And she was just going on and on and on about it. I was in a daze, and I was in shock, actually. And I called a friend of mine. I was involved with the psychic community there in Manitou Springs, out of Colorado Springs. And I had a friend of mine who was a psychic, and come to see me because I didn't know what had happened. And she walks in that day. I didn't go to work or anything. I was sitting there staring at the wall. My whole world was turned upside down. And she walked in and she looked me up in depth. She stopped and she looked at me and I could see her looking through me, you know. And I was like, what? And she goes, and I hadn't even told her anything. I just said, get over here. I need to talk to you. And she looked me up and down and she goes, you're pregnant. And I go, yeah, great, that's great. Right, yeah, right, I'm pregnant. Okay. And she goes, no, really, you're pregnant. And then I kind of took a deep breath in, and I go, this is just really too much, Morgan. I really don't want to, I can't deal with this right now. Can I just tell you what happened? And she listened very quiet and very content the whole time about the whole story, and then she begins to tell me about the Zeta Reticuli and how they had so much violation in their world and destroyed their home world and came here and the whole thing about Roswell. And I could barely even listen to anything that she was saying. I kept trying to figure out what does this have to do with me? And finally she came around to the whole hybrid program. And when she got to the hybrid program, she said, I bet you I would put probably $1 million on the fact that your mother was abducted when she was pregnant with you, because that's how it goes. They prepare the generation that's actually gonna. I said, okay. She said, now you've just been reunited with your mother. I said, yes. And she goes, call her. I said, I'm not gonna call. Anyway, after some arguing, I called my mom on the phone and I said, okay, I got a question for you. This is very strange, and I'm gonna tell you afterwards, after you answer my question, what happened. I said, were you, when you were pregnant with me, by prompting from my friend, did you ever have dreams of being in an alien aircraft, or awake dreams or sleep dreams or memories? Or, and she, I couldn't even finish what I was saying, and immediately my mom says, oh yeah, the entire time I was pregnant with you. So it was, to say the least, I was completely and totally overwhelmed. At some point, I just handed the phone to Morgan, and I said, I can't deal with this. Please talk to her about what's going on. I need to go lie down. So what ended up happening was we went to the store, because Morgan was like, no, you can't go to a doctor. You certainly can't go to the military doctor, because she told me this whole thing about they only allow you to carry the baby for a certain time, and then they take them. And I was infuriated. I said, there is no, first of all, they did not have my permission to do this to me. Where in the world do they get off doing this to me? I was so upset, and I was so hurt, but really what was there for me was anger and protection. After it started to really sink into me, after taking several home pregnancy tests, and it continuously different brands, positive, 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 I was like, okay, now what do I do? So we all sat down. There was a group of psychics from the community in Manitou Springs that my friend Morgan LeFay brought in. And they said, okay, she said, this is the circumstance. What can we do? And they all started brainstorming about psychic protection, putting up walls, breaking the sacred contract, on and on and on and on and on. We went through just every rigmarole that we possibly could, and had an army of women trying to protect me, so that because I said, finally, it's my choice. If I'm pregnant, I'm keeping this baby. They can't take it from me. And for 5 months, we succeeded in doing it. For 5 months, we were able to keep them away. And so finally, my partner at the time said, that's enough. You know, I was doing what there was for me to do, you know, and I started showing, actually. I was very, very skinny, 140 pounds, and I started showing at this time, and didn't have my period the whole time, and was taking the vitamins I should be doing. I stopped swinging a hammer in construction, started driving a roach coach, you know, the ones that go around and give the food to the construction people, and did all that I could to be responsible for my condition. And finally my partner said, that's it. If you really are pregnant, you need to go see a doctor. I'm putting my foot down. You know, this is enough now. You could be going and, you know, you could be actually delivering a baby and haven't seen a doctor. You have to go see a doctor. So we brought in the women again, and they said, well, fine. If you're going to go see a doctor, we'll look for a doctor that we think that can keep this quiet. And they came back to me with a name, and someone set an appointment. I didn't actually set the appointment. Somebody set the appointment, and they were going to pitch in to help me go see the doctor because I had military benefits and couldn't afford to go on my own to a permit doctor. So it was all set, and I was supposed to go at the beginning of the next week, and it was the weekend. And I remember it was a Saturday morning, and I sat up and I screamed, no, and I grabbed my stomach and it was flat, and I just crumpled over and I started sobbing. And I said, it's gone, it's gone, it's gone. And I woke up my partner, it's gone, it's gone. And I just went into the worst depression. And my period came back immediately. I had a lot of pain. And I was so upset and I was so angry. But at first, I had really had to deal with my heartbreak, and I couldn't believe the amount of sorrow and the amount of pain that it caused me. And so I started, you know, seeing my friends and talking to my friends, and I did all that I could. But I have to tell you, at some point, the anger kicked in, and I was really angry, and I wanted somebody to answer for what had happened. I wanted somebody to pay for taking a child away from me, for using me as some sort of test tube, for using my soul and my body in that way. And so I started digging. I started calling up men in my unit. I started calling up people I'd served with. I started asking questions. Does this program really exist? Who knows about it? Who can talk to me? Someone's going to answer for this. And I was still driving a roach coach at the time because I was so depressed that sometimes, more times than not, I wouldn't actually go to work. And I basically told the people I worked for that I had lost a child, and they were really good and working with me on it. But I had just started going back to work probably about after a month of just staying locked in my room and sobbing. And I came home from work one day, and I drove up to the apartment complex, and standing there were two men in black suits and standing by a dark sedan, black sedan. And it was like I knew immediately. As soon as I got out, I slammed the door, and I thought to myself, it's about time that somebody, because I was starting to feel crazy. Nobody was responding. Nothing was happening. I wasn't getting anywhere. And I slammed the door, and I walked right up to them, and they said, come with us, please. And I said, you betcha. Somebody's going to explain what in the world happened here. And so they opened up the back driver's side, behind the driver's side, and the passenger behind the driver's side, and had me get in. And then one got in the front passenger side. And so I could see him better than I could see the man in front of me. And so we're driving along, and I started to ask him where we're going, what's going on, and they wouldn't speak, weren't speaking at all. And at some point, I realized that as I got angrier, something was messing with my emotions. Like, I would get really, really angry, like, you will tell me what's going on here, and all of a sudden I would be calm again. And at some point I kind of looked over to the one that was sitting in the driver's side, and I looked at him, and I was like, okay, I can play too, you know. So I started to try to delve in energetically, and I almost felt like I got shocked. And so I jumped, and I kind of looked at him. You know, going back and doing the work that I have over the last year, and really, because for a very long time, I put this memory so deep in the recesses that I didn't really work with the fact that I realized that this being that was in the front seat was actually manipulating my emotions as we were driving and trying to keep me calm. And so, to me, that just says it was someone else that was a part of the hybrid program and that had the type of gift that could do something like that. And so, I don't know if you all are familiar with NORAD, but we ended up going sort of a side back way to NORAD. And so it was a little bit of a drive, and off we go, and this was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And they ended up taking me in a side entrance, and we went into the elevator, and we were down several stories, and every time I would ask a question, I would not get a verbal response, but emotionally something would happen. Anytime I would start to get upset, afraid, something like that. And so down we go in the mountain, and I was still like pretty righteous at the time, very fired up, like somebody's going to answer. Somebody's going to give me this answer. Somehow today my question will be answered. And so we go down, and we start walking through areas I think I'm going to reserve really describing what it looked like, and really I'd like to relay, because it was quite a long time. There was a lot of time I spent in the mountain. But basically they took me into an area where there was the blast glass, a very thick glass, and what we were doing is we were looking out over about 4 stories down, and about a couple football fields out was this enormous hangar with all these different types of aircraft in it. And these two were my escort. They walked up to the glass, and they turned around and faced out. And so I'm in between the two of them, and I kind of look at him like, okay, what do you want me to do? And so I started looking down, and I started looking out, and it took me several minutes, probably a good 5-6 minutes, to try to figure out what it is that they wanted me to do. And eventually I looked about a football field out in front of me at about 11 o'clock, and there sat a little aircraft. It was a round, like what people would talk about, spacecraft, like space flying saucer. It was round, had a little bit of a dome on the top, but I could see, because it was well lit out there, that it was casting a shadow, but there was nothing underneath it. It was suspended where it was, whereas when I looked over at all the other aircraft, they were sitting on landing gear. And so I just, when it finally hit me, I went, oh, and I looked at the man to my right, like, you know, because your first reaction is, do you see that? Do you see what I'm seeing there? And as soon as I did that, off they started walking. and it was time for me to follow them. So out we went. We took a little bit more time. We got into another area, and in this area it was well lit, like an office type area. And they took me into this one area, and this I'll never forget him. He was just the goofiest, funniest looking guy. He was in a lab coat, you know, with the little pocket protector things and different kinds of things in his pocket. And he runs up to me, "Oh, I'm so glad you're here. They told me you were going to be coming today. They want me to show you something. Please come with me." And they take me into a room that's inside of a room. And on the outside of the room, it was like a room inside the room, the interior room had these different boxes and different computer-looking things, and then it was surrounded by glass. On the exterior of that room, there were all these other computers and boxes and electronical equipment. And he takes me to the interior part of it, and he starts to say, "So what is it I'm supposed to show you is this." And so he takes a Pepsi can, and he opens up this kind of plexiglass sliding thing, and he sets the Pepsi can in there, and he shuts it because you can still see the Pepsi can through this glass. And he said, "Okay, come with me." And we go to the outside part of the ring, outside part of the room, and he's on the computer, and he starts talking, you know, science thing. You know, I think he was trying to explain the science behind it, but I'm still standing here trying to figure out, this entire time being flanked by these two men, what it was that he wanted to show me. So I'm looking right at him when he's talking, and then he looks up at me and he goes, "You missed it. Come on, you missed it." And I looked at him, and he goes, and he points over to the other side of the interior room, and there's the Pepsi can on the other side. And I kind of looked at him and I rolled my eyes, you know. And he takes me back in the room. He grabs the Pepsi can on the side of the machine, and it's probably about a 15-foot span between the two machines. And I'm looking to see if there's a tube that sucked it through, and I'm looking to see what happened. There's nothing like that. He said, "Now listen." And he took out this little pen, and he scratched an X on the bottom right-hand side of the can. He said, "Okay, look, I put this X on there." He took it over, and he put it back on the left side, took me back out, and he said, "Now don't look at me. Look over there." And just like on Star Trek, that thing started dematerializing. He goes, "Now look over there." And I looked, and I turned my head to the right, and it started materializing back on the right-hand side. And then I kind of looked at him like, "Come on." So he goes, "Oh, come on, let's go in." We go inside, he lifts it up, and he shows me the can. And I have a photographic memory, if anything, and that was the exact same scratch he'd put on it. So I said, "How did you do that?" And he started to say, "Well, when they came, blah, 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 blah." And they immediately, the one step forward, he stopped speaking. And he kind of looked at me, and he kind of raised his eyebrows. And I looked at him, and I looked at the men in black. I mean, I really hate to call them that because it's, you know, kind of been Hollywoodized. But these gentlemen were like, "It's time to go." Basically was the sense that we got. "It's time to go." So off I go again. And then we're walking for some time. We're taking different elevators and walking for long periods of time. I mean, the space underneath in NORAD and underneath the mountain is just enormous. It's just enormous. I can't even begin to describe it, but we entered, after some time of walking, we entered into an area that I very distinctly smelled like hospital. I've got a very keen sense of smell, and it's that same kind of smell when you go into a hospital. And we're walking through brightly lit areas. Other areas were not brightly lit. They were just concrete with conduit with electricity running back. Other areas we'd walk into had drywall and lights. This was drywall and lights and that smell. And they took me into a room, and they closed the door behind me, and one stood outside and one came inside with me. And we walked up to a glass, and he hit a shade, and the shade went up. And on the other side of the glass, laying on this long table, was a dead gray. And it was only until then that I started to question whether or not I was going to make it out alive. Up until then, somehow, it didn't bother me, this whole experience and all these things that they were showing me, until I saw the dead gray, and all of a sudden I went, "I'm going to die. They are going to make me disappear. I have seen too much. Why are they showing me this?" And so I stood there, and I felt in energetically, and it was definitely dead. There was no life coming from it. And I did actually physically took a step back and started to go white. And again, I started to get sick to my stomach, and then the one looked at me, and I started to feel better, and I started to feel more calm. And at some point, I just kind of detached and went, "That's it." And I started, and then off he goes again. we start walking, but the difference between the one that I saw in my room and the one that I saw behind that glass, and I didn't know till years later, the one that I saw behind that glass on that table was about 6 feet tall. The one that I saw in my room that night was about 2.5-3 feet tall. And so out we go, and we walk for some time again, and they end up taking me into what this area like a conference room, a big long oval table. And I sit down, and I start looking around, and I'm sitting there thinking about my family, about my biological family I was just reunited with, about my adopted family, about all the loved ones, and I just thought to myself that I would never see them again, and I just had no idea what they were going to do with me, whether they were going to make me disappear, whether they were going to kill me. And I had a long time to think about it. It was a good 45 minutes to an hour before, and these two kind of flanked me. I sat down in this chair. One was on my right behind me. One was on my left behind me. I went through the whole rigmarole about I could take them out, how I could take them out. I mean, I was a badass in the military. So I was trying to think about, and every time I start to think about how I would grab one and what I would do to the other, it's like my mind went clear again. And I had a hard time trying to focus on what was it that I was going to do. I started looking around for weapons on the table. There was a pen sitting there, and I know what I could do with a pen, and every time I start to think about it, my mind would go blank, and I would start to become calmed again. And so finally, I just got very detached, and I kind of went into soldier mode, and I just was like, okay, I'm going to face it like a soldier. And after some time, a gentleman walked in the door opposite of me. He was an older gentleman. He was mostly gray. He had a high and tight haircut. He reeked of high-ranking military, just reeked of it. He walked in with a flight suit on, with no rank insignia, no name. It was kind of that green-gray, all-one jumpsuit thing. He walks in. He's not an active-duty soldier. He's got weight on him. He's not somebody who's, you know, in the field. He's somebody behind a desk. He walks in. He sits down at this table far away. I mean, the table's got to be like 15 feet long. And he sits down, and he crosses his leg, and he looks at me for some time. And I'm just waiting for him to speak. And after what seemed like an eternity, he said, "Now you know, stop digging." And I was kind of blink, not exactly what I thought I was going to hear from him. And he said, "Now that you know, stop digging. You've been shown what you've been shown." And at some point, I got distracted again. Like, there's certain parts of this memory still to this day I don't have. Like, I can see his mouth moving, but I don't hear what he's saying. I hear sort of in the background him saying all the addresses of my family, my brothers, my sisters, where they live, my adopted mom. And at that time, I kind of checked back in again, like, wait a minute, what is he saying? Well, in a roundabout way, he was saying he knew where every one of the people in my life lived. And so he got done saying what he had to say, and that I would be escorted home. I lost about 2 hours worth of time, and then I was back at my apartment again. It was about 8 o'clock at night, and it was during the summertime, so it didn't get dark until about 9. What was really interesting to me is that my girlfriend usually got home about 6 o'clock at night, and for some reason they would know that she didn't get home until later that day. So after losing some time and basically showing back up at my apartment again, I'm just kind of in a daze, and I walk in. And what ends up happening is I completely pack all my things. I say that I'm leaving. I leave. I change my name. I go back to Alamosa, thinking that I can hide down there. And I don't have a credit card or a checking account for, I think, until about 2003. I was completely and totally freaked out, and I spent my time keeping all my belongings to where I could put them in my truck and disappear in about 2 hours. I could pack everything I own, put it in my truck and leave. And I spent a lot of time.
So when you packed up and left, what year was that?
That was the fall of 1994.
No, I'm saying when you went inside the mountain.
Oh, when I went into the mountain, it was it was like October, November. I think it was November, actually. It was about November 15th or 17th I got out of there.
What year?
1994.
So from 94 to 2000 and what? 2003 or 4?
2002, actually. 2002. I didn't have a checking account and I didn't have a credit card.
You just disappeared.
I disappeared. I used my construction skills. I worked for cash only. I would go to their bank and cash it. I was completely off grid.
Wow. Well, what about your relationship at that time? You just walked out, just said that, or just, I mean, did you end that relationship?
I ended that relationship.
Okay. What do you think, before we go on, what do you think that they were showing? What was the message that came, what was the strongest message to you about why they took you inside the mountain and why they showed you these things? Was it to scare you, or was it to inform you, or was it, do you think it was part of the continuing experiment that they had with you? Remember, they had an implant in you and they were monitoring you the whole time.
Yes, I think it was all of the above, Lavendar. I believe that they wanted to show their power, and I also believe that they wanted to educate me, because if they knew me as well as they thought they knew me, they knew I would never stop. I'm very determined, and I will keep doing something until it's done. They could have watched that in me during the military. I was the first woman to graduate Patriot Missile School. I was the first wartime sniper. Nobody could tell me no. And so I think that in their way to contain me, they wanted to give me enough information. And later on, and over the last couple of years of having this come back up again and actually doing the work to figure out what was going on, I really believe that they were trying to give me the reason why. The technology it is that they had gotten in exchange for the hybrid program, which in my mind did not begin to be enough for what happened to me.
Did anyone ever tell you what happened to the child that you were carrying?
No.
Do you think because you had made the appointment to go to the MD that that's why they came and took it?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yes.
Because had you gone for a sonogram, they would have seen that it was, they would have seen.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Did you have any other pregnancies after this?
No, I did not. In fact, I continued to deteriorate around my reproductive organs to the point where I had to have a hysterectomy in 2005. From that point forward, I had the worst pain with my period, and it got worse and worse and worse. And I started working with a specialist in Vail in 2002. Because I wanted to have a child. After being pregnant and losing a child, I was driven to want to have a child. And it didn't matter. After working with that specialist for a while, she at some point said, Sierra, you would have never been able to have a child. I had endometriosis through my entire abdomen. I had chronic cysts on my ovaries. I had two cystic fibroids in the wall of my uterus. She said, you would have never been able to carry a child.
Yeah.
You probably would have never been able to get pregnant.
Okay, I'm going to stop this recording because we need to do it in two sections.
Okay.
Okay, so we took a little break in the recording, and now this is part two with Sierra talking about her abduction and her baby experience. And in listening to this, Sierra, I must tell you how I have been tracking this as you've been talking, and that is, what a courageous soul you have been through all this, and with determination to go forward with your life and under adverse circumstances, you know, to go through the whole thing about your real mother and the foster care, and then to have this happen to you, and with no explanation, with no training, with nothing except just pure guts. You know, it's just, I mean, you just went to the deepest part of you at every given moment to gather enough courage just to keep it together. And I can see that. I can see what, yeah, I can see that you went through all those different places, but it's like everything you've gone through, though, has made you so strong and so resolved. And the more you've studied, the more that you know now, because you've taken the time. I mean, it's like you've taken, there were several years you were just out of it, okay? But now you're in it. See, now you're in it. And being in it, it's like, oh, you can suit up and really make a difference with other people that have had these experiences. But not only that, it gives you the full range and the full spectrum of how so many of the ET experiments are done here on the planet. You've been part of one. It was one that changed your life completely. Yeah. And what you've gone through has, simply toughened you up in many ways, strengthened you, but also it gives you another point of view that others don't have. You know, it's one thing to hear this story. It's another thing to live this story.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
It's like, oh, my God. So it's like, okay. And as long as I've known you and the different conversations we've had, I don't believe you've ever taken me through this journey that you've taken me through today with this story. I had different parts of it at different times. So I just want to tell you how proud of you I am, and that I'm so glad that you have our backside on Starseed Hotline, and that you have our front side, and that you have our middle, okay?
Yeah.
And to have you part of our Three Sisters spin with Ariel, this is really a moving moment for me as well. So now let's talk about you said you moved back to Alamoso in that area?
Correct.
In 2000, what, 2003, you had the hysterectomy.
Yes, so, I had the hysterectomy in 2005.
Okay. And so when did you really delve back in? I mean, were you reading UFO material at this time, abduction material? What, did you start searching and looking? And did you ever go back to the Army and ask any questions, or were you afraid to?
Well, it's interesting that you asked that. When I had went off on my own for several years, I was so deep in underground and untrackable that one day I woke up and I had this insatiable need to go back to the military. I mean, I just couldn't think of anything else. It's like something was running me. And in 2000 and, my goodness, what year was that? I'm sorry, 1997. The beginning of 1997, I actually went in active duty again.
Oh, you did?
I just walked on. Yes. And that lasted for about 3 months. And then I walked out. I said, I can't deal with it. The entire time I was in the military was like this love-hate relationship. I couldn't quite resolve the reason why I kept going back
understood. They wanted to keep tabs on you, and the only way they could do it was to control you through the military.
Yes.
but you didn't know that at the time. You didn't know that you were under mind control.
That's correct. And at some point, I was like, this is ridiculous. And I walked into the chaplain, and I said, I was down in Fort Leonard, Missouri, and I said, if you don't let me go, I'm going to hurt a lot of people. And so the chaplain in the military has a lot more power than what people know. And I was told when I was sleeping one night to go to the chaplain and tell them that. And they immediately took me back to Colorado Springs, out-processed me, and I disappeared again. And so I was, during the time that I was gone, what I researched, to be honest with you, it had nothing to do with UFOs. It had nothing to do with aliens. I stayed away from that completely. What I researched and what I was looking for is
what's the meaning of it all? Why do I have these dreams? Why, you know, what is it that, because I continue to have all of these, the thing that was on my mind, the forefront and foremost, was the earth changes and what was coming. And somehow I knew I was supposed to help people. I had no idea how. And I felt completely overwhelmed and disheartened at the fact that I'm one person, and what is it that I'm going to do to help people? I don't know what you want from me, that I would kind of scream to the heavens sometimes. And so my journey was more of a spiritual training at that point. I went from psychic community to psychic community and never really got involved or got stuck with any one thing or any one person. And I was always on the move, and I would always take the conversations. I had some amazing experiences with some pretty amazing people, and I would take those experiences as my own growth and my own learning and go on to the next thing. And it was in 2001, I had met a woman when I was in Taos, New Mexico, so I would bounce back and forth a lot between Alamosa and Taos, New Mexico. And I didn't understand until later on, I was actually following a grid line, a crystal grid line down there that fed me and kept me powered and kept me going. And it was, I was in Taos, and when my mother, my biological mother and grandmother came to visit me, and they introduced me to this woman, and she was quite extraordinary, and I ended up moving up to Summit County, Colorado, and the Breckenridge and Silverthorne area, and started hanging out with this person, and we started hiking the Grand Canyon a lot. And we were actually in the Grand Canyon when 9/11 happened, September 11th happened, and I fell asleep. I remember it was 111 degrees, and we were hiking a dry camp that day, and I took a nap, and I dreamt what was happening, and I woke up, and I'm like, oh, my God, wow. And so we had some talk, you know, she knew about my gifts and my abilities, and so we had some talk about, is it something that happened there? I said, no, this is really big. And it wasn't until the next day that we hiked out of the Grand Canyon we realized what had happened, and when I saw the footage on the television was exactly what I was seeing, with all the smoke and people running, and, you know, and I really focused at some point on my building abilities. I actually did a class called Landmark Education, and it was the forum at Landmark Education. It wasn't until I took the forum in 2003, because that was 2001. I was still kind of off-grid and hiding out. And when I met this one gal, she said, sounds like you need some skills to deal with some things that are happening in your life. When I took the Landmark Forum, I just came into my own. And the military or nobody was going to mess with me, and I didn't care who they were, what was going to happen. I was going to stand up in my own life and take a powerful stance. And so I started doing a lot of work with Landmark Education, became a leader for their education, and
tell me
really,
what they do. I don't know what they do. What do they do?
Landmark Education are tools for living. They basically deal with your ontology, your human beingness. Of something happened, you make it mean something. You basically live with a lot of constraints because you're so fearful of something that had happened that you just live in fear from that point forward. And so in a lot of ways it helped me deal with not only my childhood and stuff that happened to me, that it just made me be a stronger person and start to take a real stand for myself and my life and my abilities. And that's where I started really delving into my spirituality and having a community of powerful psychics and people around me up in Summit County. And that's where I met Esther, was up in Summit County. And then I ended up having my hysterectomy and then moving to Taos and then moving back to Denver. Now in Denver, I think that this might be a good, if you want to, it might be a good time to start talking about my walk-in experience that I started having.
Okay, all right, okay. And
so I have now a new really wonderful, powerful partner and friend. We were friends for some time before we got together, and I'm living in Denver, Lakewood, Colorado, and I was living in Lakewood, Colorado since the beginning of January of 08. I had actually suffered, and this is probably something to bring up too, because I believe it has a lot to do with some of the experiments that were happening. I had a massive multiple stroke on October 15th of 2007, And I didn't realize that I'd had a hole in my heart, and I was having small strokes my whole life. And it was a hole that tried to repair itself. And I started getting close to a lot of my power. I started really stepping into my power around spirituality. I started to come into groups of people that was probably going to lead me to my knowledge and my understanding of the Pleiadians and different things like that. And I started having a massive stroke one day. I had stroke after stroke after stroke after stroke that landed me in the hospital in Denver. And I was living in Taos at the time. And I was at heart center, and they did surgery on my heart after I had my stroke. I was completely paralyzed on my left side. And even when they came in to tell me I'd never walk again, I'd never speak again, there was that presence like I had in my childhood. Everything will be okay. You will be fine. You will completely recover. And so I entered cognitive therapy, physical therapy, and Esther, my friend and partner, was helping me through all of that. And I remember that after having come out of the stroke, there was something that was, I can feel innately different about myself. I was looking at the world as if I was an outside observer, and I was very disconnected. And they told me that it was because of my stroke, but there was something else that had happened during my stroke. Something else was there. Something else was very present, as if it was an entity or a spirit or a being was a part of me from the time that I had my stroke. And so instead of feeling like that voice that was always telling me everything was going to be okay, and it was a sense outside of myself, I sensed it inside of myself. And so as I was going through the recovery process, I started taking some advanced courses through Landmark Education, and we would travel to Phoenix every couple of months, and we'd do classes down here. And I remember my partner and I were here in Phoenix, and we had a hotel room. And we ran a women's group, and for some time, actually, I'd gotten really, really strong in my medium work. I had worked with Summit County Search and Rescue to find several people who had went missing. And so I was a registered psychic up there with a police authority in Summit County, Colorado. And so after my stroke, though, everything was completely altered. It was different. It was completely different. And as I was going through, it was almost like I was kind of afraid, like it didn't feel like I could see the spirit world anymore. And I was concerned for it for some time. I thought I had lost my ability and didn't understand that something else wonderful was developing. And so during this weekend at night, this one evening, I was we were going to bed, and my partner usually has a very, very, very hard time sleeping and goes through like an hour-long process of taking a sleeping pill, drinking sleepy time tea, warming up a neck wrap, you know, this whole ritual that she would have to do before she could go to sleep. We were in the hotel room, and she looked at me and she goes, "I'm sleepy. I think I'm going to lay down." And I kind of looked at her like, okay, yeah, whatever. And she goes and she lays down and she is gone. And I started getting antsy and agitated and anxious. And I didn't understand what was happening. It felt like something was happening in the room energetically. And so I went to lay down, and I felt like something or someone was in the room, and I was shaking Esther, and I go, "Esther, somebody's here." Because I went through the whole thing of reaching out to energetically connect with it, to sense it, to see from what realm it might be. You know, I've done a lot of work. I had done a lot of work in all those areas up to my stroke. And no matter what I did, I wasn't able to get communication. And so it frightened me. And I shook her, and I shook her, and at one point I'm like, okay, I'm really afraid now. And she just like, she was mumbling, and she goes, "Can we just talk about this in the morning?" And then she didn't stir again after that. And so I thought, oh no, oh no, oh no, here we go again. And so I rolled over to my left side with whatever it was to my back, and I started calling in my spirit guides. I started calling in the four directions. I started calling in my ancestors and my animal totems and my spirit animals, and I was gearing myself. I was putting on my armor, my shield, my whole thing, ready to do whatever it was. And then when I started transition into sleep time, which was my most powerful time, I finally rolled over. This is probably about half hour, I turned over and went, what? Finally, like, to confront it, and there was a bright flash of white, bluish light, and then I was unconscious. I don't remember anything after that. And the next day, we get up and we go to this class, and I was just out of it. I was completely, I was drained, and I didn't know what was happening. So I continued to have a lot of experiences like this, and this was in probably January of 2010. This really started happening pretty often. Things started happening around the house, different kinds of banging, different things happening around the house, the refrigerator and different doors opening and closing, bright flashes of light, white light, bright flashes of blue light. Esther was, she just was at a loss. She said, I don't know, like, this is outside my realm of training. You know, I do shaman work, I do spirit work, whatever this is, it's different from that. It's not bad, it's not hostile, it's different, and I don't know what to do for you, because I just kept going to her like, what do I do? I have no idea what's happening here. And at some point, probably about, it was in November of 2010, during Pleiadian lineup, and I didn't realize that was a date to pay attention to. All of a sudden, I woke up one day, and there was a very strong presence with me. There was a completely different consciousness that was, I felt like it was inside or attached, or that was there in my head. And I felt like I was being moved in and out of dimensions. That I think that's the best way to say. A couple of times I was at a friend's house when I would sleep away from Esther, then it seemed like that would be the time that I would have a lot of work be done. A couple of times I called her in the middle of the night, there's something here. She said, communicate with it. You're a shaman, for God's sakes. You know, communicate with it. And I said, I'm trying to. And I didn't realize till later when I started to reach out to friends. At some point, Esther just threw up her hand. She said, I don't know how to help you. You need to go someplace where you can get help and start. So I sought out the PRF, the Paranormal Research Forum of Denver, is the largest paranormal society in the country. And I didn't realize there was that resource there for me to tap into. So I showed up, and I was guided to a couple of people that were that helped me. And Don Daniels was a gentleman that started helping me. And he said, well, maybe this is your child, because I shared with him my experience. Because another thing that started coming up for me was all these memories about what had happened, because I had shoved that experience about the child and the loss of the child to the deepest recesses of my subconscious. I didn't even want to ever think about it again, and I found myself thinking about it a lot. I found myself thinking that it was a very similar experience, what was happening, but it was very different, but somehow it was triggering all of these memories. And so he said, for a short while there, he thought maybe it was my child trying to contact me. And we learned very quickly that that wasn't the case, that something else was happening. But he helped me so much in that I started undergoing a lot of changes. I started going through these headaches. I was sensitive to light, to sound, to people's energy. I had done a lot of work in my lifetime as an empath to shield myself and not take on people's things, and it seemed like all of a sudden all the work that I had done was useless, that somehow I not only was feeling past the sixth sense, but I was feeling past the tenth senses. It's as if the volume of my senses and my abilities got just cranked up to 1,000, and I didn't understand what was happening. And that eventually led me to Jeff Peckman, whom said, in my exasperation, I said, I just don't know what's happening. I really feel like I'm losing my mind. I'm thinking different thoughts. I'm seeing the world completely differently. This is not my way of processing. I don't understand what's happening. He said, you need to speak to Lavendar.
That's how you found me. Yeah, okay.
And I said, okay, if anybody could help me, please help me, because it was really great, because they were a really great conscious society. They took me to the next person they thought would help, and I'd tell my story, and they'd look at me like, I have no idea. No idea what you're going through. And then finally they said, oh, you need to speak to Faith Rinaldi, Dr. Faith Rinaldi. She she might help you. So I talked to Dr. Faith Rinaldi, and she's like, I think that you're having a walking experience. And I said, well, what's that mean? But everything she told me and everything she was talking to me about, although she has great information, just wasn't resonating for me. And that's when I met Jeff Peckman. And Jeff Peckman says, well, if you are dealing with walking experience, you need to speak with Lavendar. So that's when I spoke with you, Lavendar, and I believe it was January. So it was November, I'm sorry, of 2009, and it was February of 2010 that you and I were connected for the very first time.
Right.
And it was like a breath of fresh air as soon as you started speaking to me, because all you did is have me speak for about 10, 15 minutes about what I was experiencing, and I didn't even get it all out. All I kept saying, because I was so wound up at the time and I was so concerned for myself, was I feel like I'm losing my mind. I feel like I'm losing my mind. And you just started saying, this is a walk-in. And so when I started working with you and started doing all that there was to do to have the integration process go as smoothly as possible, the integration process then took me all the way through March, April, May. In May, because you had told me that the integration process could take anywhere from, you know, a few weeks to several months, and it just depended on what my mission was and what the walk-in was here to deliver to me and teach me, and I was able to find out with a lot of confidence, and I believed it right away that it was the walk-in I was dealing with was a Pleiadian walk-in. And it was interesting because back in the 90s when I was in Manitou Springs, just before I had that experience with the Grays, I was working for a woman doing landscaping who was a psychic that was having some channeler, this world-renowned channeler, and I can't remember her name, and you and I have spoken about her. I've been trying to remember her name, Lavendar, that came in and was doing channel work, and I basically worked off my session with her, and when I sat with her, she gasped and kind of threw herself back and went, the entire Pleiadian Council is here to speak to you. And I thought she was crazy. I kind of looked at her like, oh boy, what have I gotten myself into? Because this was way back at the beginning of my whole spiritual awakening and,
right.
and such. But it was literally probably about 3 weeks before that interaction with the Grays. And I remember the message was, you have to prepare yourself for what's coming. And you'll be tested, and we are always there for you, and this is not your agenda, this is not who you are, what you're supposed to be up to, this is, you know, and all the stuff that was coming through that I really didn't understand at the time and had forgotten about until I started working with my walk-in. And so my integration process was very different, actually. I had a physical sensation of integration. At one point, I was so sensitive to, I remember the wind would blow, and I had the worst headaches, and the EMF field, I was so sensitive during this integration process that I needed to get myself as far away from electricity, away from power line.
That's a really good indication of electromagnetics, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now, you're pretty well integrated with your walk-in now, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm looking at the time, and so I'm thinking that maybe we should wrap this up and then throw it back to Arielle so that she can get this recorded so that people will get to come on and ask questions. And I know that you'll be doing the chat room. So maybe you'll be able to answer the questions from the chat room and from our callers that want to talk to you about this experience. So I just want to thank you so much for sharing this story with us. And I know that you have more and more and more to say, and we will do updates at different times with you from this story, okay?
Perfect.
So anyway... back to you, Arielle.
Well, I'm just blown away. Sierra, your mic is still open, and Lavendar, so is yours. So I want to invite you both to come back on. And I'm just so proud to know you, Sierra.
Well, thank you so much. It's been quite a ride in my whole life, and for a very long time there, I knew there was something for me to contribute, but it didn't really manifest itself until after my stroke when I started having my experience with the walk-in. And that was really, truly the thing that had brought me back into balance, because once I had that connection with the Pleiadians, my Pleiadian brothers and sisters, it really grounded me and gave me the strength and the confidence. Because what had happened at the beginning of the contact right after my stroke was what the very first thing I needed to deal with my trauma around the graves. And so they worked with me a lot on that. There's a lot of things they were working with me on doing, shifting between dimensions and going back and having those memories and resolving the fear and the pain around it. And the very next step was them taking me back to who I was before I came into this lifetime. And the power of remembering who I was when I chose to come down here and do this mission has just added so much strength and so much character to what I'm doing now.
Well, we sure appreciate having you on our team. So, we do have a very full switchboard. I mean, record numbers, I believe. So, if you do have a question, you have to press 1, so that we know that you have something to say. And we will try to get to you. Okay, someone is making an echo. I hope it's not you, Sierra. I think it's gone now. Okay, we are going to... give me just a second here. We do have a question. I pushed the wrong button. Sorry about that. Hang on. Oh, she's in the screening room, so we're going to have to wait on that one. Okay. Well, we have Belva here, so let's talk to Belva first. Hello, Belva, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
That was magnificent. What a team we're growing. It's wonderful. I was very excited for her. The only thing that I didn't understand is why they showed her all those things in those rooms. And I didn't exactly, I thought maybe Lavender would add something to why they showed her those different things. What did that really have to do with the experiments they had done with her?
I think you did have a comment on that, Lavender.
Well, I think they just wanted to see. Remember, she was an experiment, and they needed to know how far they could take her with information and then track her to see what she would do with it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I think that was their agenda.
It was so much in left field from what she had been doing. It was like it was a whole other track that they never did follow up on or continue with or something like that. That's why I wondered.
Oh, I think they've been tracking her
from the beginning.
I think they've been tracking her from all this time. They're tracking her now.
Yeah.
And they're allowing her to speak.
As you said, Lavender, it was also to demonstrate what was in it for them. With the technology and assistance, from a military point of view, and that
and what
her experience was part of her experience was what they traded. You can do this to her if you will show us how to make the Pepsi can go from here to there. and as Sierra said, that's really not enough. So. Anyway, Belva, I want to thank you for your Belvalation this week and have you just stay on the line in case someone does have a question for you. We're going to move on to our next caller now.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Okay. We're going to hear from Kimberly. Hang on a second. There it goes. Now it's on.
Hi.
Kimberly, you are on the air.
Yes, thank you so much. I went through the experience with the dark forces and the energy that they, the low frequencies, and when I woke up, it was with them waking me up, and I felt like I was just like in Nowheresville, like the lowest frequencies, and I wanted to just pull the cords out of all the computers and get the metal away from me. And I totally understand what Sarah's saying, because it just felt like the strangest, weirdest thing. And then I learned to start tapping on things to get phone calls out. So I got caught up in a situation where I was getting like these almost like pings throughout my body and my head, like energy, like somebody was trying to contact me. And it was like, no, I don't know who's who and what's what. And I was actually filmed at Garden City Police Department with video of me shaking my head. And all these cops standing around had all these phones, just standing there with their phones, like they were trying to block my frequency. It was like the wildest thing I ever seen. Then I went to the hospital and I calmed down, but I kept calling out for any government agency, galactic, international, space agency. I mean, I went all out, and then they shot me with drugs and put me down and made me go to sleep, cut me off totally.
So I guess you really could relate to Sierra's story, even more so than others. But I hope that her strength and her courage.
No. I'm all light now. I'm in control out of that.
Well,
but it made
you.
Me see what they do. It
uh-huh.
it can be so harmful and hurtful when you don't know what's going on. I've seen kids' stories written over here. My mom wants to put me on drugs because they think I'm crazy. I don't know what I'm, thinking. And it's a serious issue. But the lights grab and hold. I can see that, and the energies are strong. And the dark thinks they have the challenge beaten, but it won't last. They cannot rule. It won't happen.
Well, you are so right, and I'm glad that you have the strength of the light and that you are one with it. You will. It's not like you have to worry about losing it, because once you are integrated with the light forces and the up spiral energies of the universe, that's where you truly grab onto your strength and come into your power. And we're glad that you called in to share that with us. And
you're most very welcome, and I appreciate everything you do.
Well, thank you so much, Kimberly. And
we'll
talk to you later. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Okay, we have a question for Sierra from Will.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. Hi, Will.
Hi. Hi, how are you guys?
I'm good. Did you have a question or a comment for Sierra?
Yeah, I actually do. And, I mean, I'll throw it out for all of you guys because I'm not sure who might have experiences with this, but I've myself had encounters with greys before, and the ones I've seen were on the spacecraft, it sounded like it, at least, that landed on my roof. And the thing about them was that they were kind of see-through. They weren't exactly, green or anything. They didn't have any color. I could see through them, and they would touch my furniture. They would do things around the house, but they weren't solid. And I was wondering if Sierra, if her experience was similar, or if they were actually solid and looked more materialized, I guess.
When I had that particular visitation, that being was definitely in the room, was solid. Now, I've had a lot of what they call high strangeness for the last couple of years, where different beings will come and go, and sometimes I can sense them. But what there is to sort of bring the attention to is that these beings with a particular technology can half shift into different dimensions. And so it might be that they were just sort of one phase off of where we are here, but Lavender, you have any input on that?
No, not really. No, I'll think about it.
Okay, great. So what was your experience, Will? I mean, were you frightened by this, or you just kind of observed these, like these were just these things walking around? How did it leave you?
Well, I mean, it was basically I was staying at a friend's house, and it was the sun was about to rise. It was like 5 in the morning, which seems to be a common thing for a lot of people who have visits from these beings. And the first thing I heard was, I thought that there was a plane that was about to crash on our house, and I thought we were going to die. And I just thought, oh, God, here it goes. I'm leaving the planet. I'm gone. And it was very scary. But the thing that really weirded me out right then was that right when the time like something was going to crash in the house, it stopped. And I heard beeping and all kinds of electronics going off. And then I thought, okay, this is ridiculous, but it sounds like one of those spaceships in those movies. And before I knew it, I had this tall gray, but it was see-through, but he was probably about 6 or 7 feet tall staring at me through the window. And after that, yeah, I was in a bit of a delusional state from all of it. It scared me because I didn't even know they were real at first. And, I was very, very scared after that. I had to get, mental help from, doctors. No one believed me. Everyone thought I was crazy. So I had to learn how to just keep it to myself after a while. But it was pretty hard.
Yeah, well, this is Arielle. I'd like to just say that to Will and to anyone else, when you do have experiences that you don't understand, you have to know who to talk to about it and who not to talk to about it, as Sierra learned as a child. And I do want to interject that years and years of gathering information and listening to other people, there does seem to be a faction of the grays that are not bad. They're not of the dark. And those are, I think, the taller ones. I might be getting my facts screwed up, but they're not always something to strike fear in your heart, because we always want you to know that as Starseed, everyone has guardians that are of the light and are of the up spiral, and sometimes things happen just to show you as a demonstration, even if it is kind of disconcerting or scary while it's happening. You must know that you will always be monitored and protected, and just have faith in that. Okay, Will, thanks for calling in. And of course, if anyone wants to discuss any of these things from any of our callers or stories, you can go on the forum and further conversations with other Starseed and members of the forum. So, but I'm going to try to get through as many of our callers as we can this evening. So, Will, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, no problem. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye. Okay. We've got our friend Mark in New Hampshire. Mark, you're on the air.
Namaste. Love, light, and blessings to everybody.
Well, thank you.
One thing which I'm working on, I've been being guided that it's now time, is I'm working on putting together a huge workshop up in the White Mountains, and part of the workshop is to bring all the participants to Mount Lafayette, which is where the portal is to the Crystal City of Light, which I've been in a few times. And I'm definitely looking for anyone here that would be interested in attending, perhaps to work with me on some ideas. Also, I'm also requesting if Lavender Ariel could help me on some specific things with it. That would be much appreciated. And, I mean, this is a big to-do. And basically, once I have the foundation set, and right now I'm looking at lodging and other basic foundation areas I need before I actually plan the event, which I'm already working. I already have a lot of ideas that I've been shown for it. And this is going to be huge. And, of course, we'll be going to the Crystal City of Light. And there's one particular area where we can really go. Well, I'll talk to Lavender about it. She might have some other insights that could help as well. But I do feel that
and certainly you can go on the forum, and we have a great bunch of Starseed members on our forum. Some are very advanced, and some are newly activated. So do go and get the input. Take advantage of that resource that you have. And thank you so much for calling in, Marcus.
Thank you very much. And if anyone wants to be involved, just send me an email, innerlightexpressions, that's plural, @gmail.com.
Okay, innerlightexpressions@gmail.com. Thanks, Marcus. Yes. We'll talk to you later.
All right, thank you very much. Love, light, and blessings.
Bye-bye. Okay, okay, who is we got next? We have Ashtiana. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. Sierra, thank you so much for sharing. I really appreciate your courage and your clarity in this communication. I think some of the things you're discussing are really hard for people to talk about, and, you know, the internal judgment that one can carry about even having these experiences is sometimes overwhelming. So having said that, really my question is, can you all, and Ariel, you made some really great points about this, and Lavendar, maybe you can chime in, but can you break down almost on a one-on-one basis what this matter of mind control is, and grays and good grays and bad grays and Pleiadians, and what would be a military agenda, and why would, you know, they be seeding in human species, and why would someone be trying to control your mind telepathically? I mean, could you all just speak to some of that, please?
Well, that's a mouthful.
Yes, ma'am.
That's a show in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, that it really is. Well, it has to do with the evolution of the intellect and the minds of people, and it's to see how far the consciousness can go with different experiments. And the government, of course, when they made the agreements with the Greys, you know, that became a whole agenda within itself. And I won't really get into what their agenda was, because some of it's still going on. But it's a combination of seeing how far people can take their consciousness and rise above it. It's always about a step up. It's always about a step up. And a lot of violations, of course, have happened. And they also want to see, how do people react in being violated with mind control? And, of course, the Greys have given our government so much technology concerning mind control that, we, you know, those are the things that we're having to grab a hold of now, with HARP and the different technologies that are simply monitoring people all over the planet. This is a gigantic, gigantic operation. But one of the things I wanted to mention is that Jesse Ventura has been on television for the last 2 days, and he's been taking the lid off of all of this. And bless his heart, he's just, you know, he's one of the people that's really pioneering with his show Conspiracy Theory, and he's talked about HARP, he's talked about 9/11, and mind control is part of it. And so for those of you that haven't been keeping up with Jesse Ventura and his work, it's on True TV, and you can see all of those reruns. I think they're also on YouTube. But to your question, Ashtiana, this is very complicated. There's not a simple answer to this, except to say, stay in your power. If you know who you are and you know the basics of why you're here, it gives you the strength to go forward. And if you don't know who you are, that means someone does know who you are. And it's like, get to know yourself better before someone else does.
Thank you for that, Lavendar. Would another way of expanding that be that it's like you need to grab a hold of your own record?
Sometimes grabbing a hold of your own records helps you to evaluate some of your masterships, your rites of passage, your natural state. Yes, that's part of it. But again, it's like, don't get so caught up in the past that you forget about who you are in the present so that you can go toward the future.
So having this kind of dialogue about, you know, mind control and this technology that was taught by beings from other planets with other agendas, how much is free will an element here? Is that the sovereign in this? Is that like the alchemic agent, is to have free will and to be able to have a clear intention to create your own reality? Is that like the cornerstone in all of this?
Free will is a great part of the experiment. But then I have this saying called free will my ass, which means if you're part of an experiment where you don't really have a whole lot of free will because you're tied to an experiment that others are controlling, then that probably doesn't apply. And I know
then
that.
What do you do in that kind of situation? If you wake up and realize I'm part of an experiment that others are controlling, where do you find sovereignty on the planet and within your life?
Well, then you got to dig deep and go no more, and then you start erasing contracts and you start taking your power and you get your sword out and you just go to work.
Said like the true Sag goddess that you are. Thank you so much, Lavendar.
You okay?
Thank you, Ashtiana, for calling.
Well, Nancy, Ariel, Nancy was going to call in from New Mexico. Do you see her number anywhere?
Give me a second to check. Actually, give me more than a second. Still looking. Go ahead. Talk amongst yourselves, boys and girls.
Lavendar, I was in the chat room checking on everyone just a few minutes ago, and one of the questions and one of the things that they wanted to know about is how do you know if you're having a walking experience? And you're just a little bit more well-spoken about this than I am at this time. Could you maybe give just a little bit of breakdown about the different kinds of walk-ins real quick and kind of see what you're led to say about that?
Well, there are temporary walk-ins that come and give you strength and courage to go forward, and your mind will probably blend in with their thinking, and sometimes you'll hear a voice, sometimes you'll just feel a presence. Sometimes they'll come into the room, you know, like you said, with a blue light. You know, there's so many different ways that they present themselves. Depending on your genetics, your bloodline, and your soul records, that all is taken into account before a walk-in approaches a person. So, you know, we've had different shows about walk-ins, and there's a lot of information on our website about the different kinds of walk-ins that there are. That's huge. It's just huge. And with so many Pleiadians now that have come to be walk-ins on the planet, and I'm finding them every day. Every day, someone is calling, make an appointment, and sure enough, they have walk-in attachments. They have, you know, something that's happened to them that absolutely spirals them up into their knowingness. You know, that's what it's about, being tapped into your knowingness about how to take your power, how to go forward, how to find your soul group. And soul groups, we're finding them all over the planet.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Ariel, did you find Nancy?
No, I have not.
Okay. I sent you her phone number. Before.
Yes, I don't. Well, let's just in lieu of Nancy being able to, if she is here, I haven't seen the number that I'm looking for. But why don't you just take about 30 seconds and tell about her conference and give the website.
I don't have that information
okay,
in front of me. I'm so sorry.
It is, the conference is April 29th through May 1st at. And she has two websites that you can go to. This is about building a special school for Starseed in Albuquerque, I believe. And the name of the website for the school would be childsmiraclemind.org. And the website for the conference, which they still have some tickets for, and they're they've got a great deal on tickets. I think it was $100 for 3 days worth of 16 speakers of an all-star cast. And that is that website, I think, for that conference. Sierra, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, awakenowconference.com?
I thought it was Wake Up Now, but you might be right. It's either wakeupnowconference.com or awakenowconference.com.
awakenowconference.com. But I'm sure you could go to the Child's Miracle Mind. That's M-I-N-D, childsmiraclemind.org, and get a hold of Nancy Wallace if you are in the Albuquerque or New Mexico area or want to be. Please check that out. We only have about 4 minutes, and I need to we have a call from Jen, our friend Jen, with a question, comment. Jen, are you there?
I am here, but actually all of my questions have been answered, guys, and I know we've got some other callers in queue, so I will surrender to the remaining group.
Well, thank you so much, and we will talk to you soon. Okay.
Thanks, love.
Bye-bye. Okay, I think we can just take maybe one more, and we do have, I tell you, we do have so many callers on the switchboard right now that we're not going to be able to get to everybody, but you can go to the forum and ask your question. Right now we have Tekaylee online. You're on the air, sweetheart.
Blessings to you all.
Hello.
I wanted to share that in my experience going through a very dark place where I was frightened of being controlled and managed in all sorts of ways, and it was very real. The thing is that it brings to us the strength to know ourselves, to know what we stand for, to be in our truth, in our power, and to insist that the light forces help us. And that's been covered by a number of different speakers, so I won't continue with that, only to say that there is a huge amount of light always supporting us, each and every one of us, no matter what contract we may have agreed to. We always have choice. And we always can find our way through it and beyond it when we let go of the fear enough. And that is always the challenge. So that's what I wanted to say. And also to Sierra, my heart goes out to you because I know just a very little of what you might have experienced. And I congratulate you. I celebrate you. And I really honor you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was a very well said and uplifting message for us. And I think that is a good note for us to close on. Tekaylee, thank you so much calling in from far away. Where are you in Australia, are you?
Australia, in Sydney, yes.
Well, and it's already tomorrow there.
So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us, as always. And we'll look forward to speaking to you again. So.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Well, Lavendar and Sierra, we only have just under 2 minutes here, so let's go ahead and wrap this up. And to the other callers that we just don't have enough time to get through all of them, thank you so much for calling and listening. Lavendar, Sierra, and hang on, we've got a Purple Sage. Your mic is open, too. So, ladies, any comments here? We have a minute left.
It's just been a great honor to be on the air and share with my Starseed brothers and sisters and galactic beings out there. And we just are constantly looking at different ways in which we can support Starseed and all the different between the three of us and on with the different types of Starseed we've got. We just have all kinds of support, all kinds of love for everyone that's out there. So thank you for being here.
Well said, Sierra. Purple Sage, we want to thank you and Mystic for helping out on the switchboard and the chat room tonight. We really, really are grateful for your help. And with that, we'll invite you to our website, starseedhotline.com, our Starseed support forum at starseedhotline.ning.com, and join us next week and every week on Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. for our Starseed Radio Academy. Thank you so much for being with us, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.